Hello and welcome to the Science Debating and Creationism Podcast, Episode 2, Science and the False Dichotomy. And here are your random facts for today.
Hello, I'm Zach Stout with your random facts for the day. 1 in 5,000 North Atlantic lobsters are born bright blue. Cheeseburgers are the best food in the world.
Thank you very much, Zach Stout. And on to our first topic, science. Now, there's a lot to talk about when you talk about science. Today, I was just going to give you a general idea what science is about, what the goals are, define some terms, and so on. So, first of all, the definition. Science is a system of acquiring knowledge based on the scientific method. We will go over the scientific method in one of our later episodes. The goal of science is to make useful models of reality. The goal is not to answer all questions. That's a common misconception. Science only makes useful models of reality. I'd like to define some terms here. First of all, a model. A model is a description or a simplification of something in nature, which can be used to make predictions and can be verified by testing. A fact. A fact is an objective and verifiable observation. That means a fact is, for example, the speed of light is 300,000 kilometers per second. A hypothesis. A hypothesis is an educated guess. It is a prediction that has yet to be tested. A law. A law is a generalized description based on empirical observations of physical behavior. Physical laws are universal and absolute. Nothing in the universe can contradict them. Nothing can violate them. An example for a law would be the laws of thermodynamics or the law of gravity. Next and last term is a theory. Now, the common misconception is that a theory is a guess. That's what it's used in everyday language, like, I have a theory. But that's not how it's used in science. In science, a theory is an explanation. It is made up of laws, tested hypotheses, facts, and other things, and is a lot more complex than laws. It covers a large body of evidence, and laws only cover a little thing, like the law of gravity only says how fast something's gonna fall down. Yet, a theory explains why it's going to fall down and how. So, because theories cover such large bodies of evidence, they are subject to change as the evidence changes. A law is not that much subject to change, because it only covers such a small body of evidence. A theory accounts for an observation. It explains it, it relates it to other observations, and it makes testable predictions based upon it. A law says that something happens. A theory says why and how something happens. A common misconception is also that a theory can somehow be proven and then evolves into a law. Yet a theory cannot be proven by the simple nature of it. An explanation cannot be proven, but it can have a large body of evidence backing it up and verifying it over and over and over. Theories will not evolve into laws once they're proven enough, but laws can be deducted from theories. But that doesn't mean the theory goes away and goes into a law. The theory will still be there. These two things, laws and theories, as well as facts and hypotheses, are used in science together to explain the world. One does not evolve into another one. Theories are made up of laws and facts and all that, yet still all of them are used to explain, describe, and predict the world. I'd like to go on to some properties of scientific models. These are not all properties, but some that I want to highlight. The first is testability. A scientific model has to be able to be tested. The second is reproducibility. That means these tests have to give you the same results over and over and over. You can test the model over and over and over, and it should always give you the same results. The third, and probably one of the most important properties of scientific models, is falsifiability. This is the possibility to disprove it logically, which basically means you have to be able to disprove something. Not you have to disprove something, obviously. If you found out something that is true, you will not be able to disprove it, but there has to be the logical possibility to disprove it. That means we pretty much know that gravity pulls all apples from trees to the ground. Yet, if you would see, without any wind influence or anything, that an apple just falls up into the sky, that would falsify basically what we know about gravity. And gravity leaves this possibility to disprove it. Nobody's ever seen that, but yet still it is falsifiable. So falsifiability, as I said, is the possibility to disprove something logically. The next thing is something that science assumes. It is methodological naturalism. Methodological naturalism says we search for natural explanations for natural occurrences. That does exclude the supernatural from explanations, yet it does not say that there is no God or nothing supernatural. It's just that the supernatural cannot be tested, and that's why we have to exclude it. If you include the supernatural into explanations about the world, you can make arbitrary claims about anything, and nobody will be able to disprove it. If you go by the properties of scientific models I mentioned earlier, you have, first of all, testability. The supernatural is not testable. Next, you have reproducibility. The supernatural, these tests are not reproducible. That means it doesn't give you the same results when you test it over and over. In fact, you cannot test it. And the third, falsifiability. You can make claims, as I said, about anything, and nobody will ever be able to disprove you. So of all the properties I listed, the supernatural explanation does not meet any of them. And that's why we exclude it from science, because we cannot test for it, we can't reproduce it, and it is not falsifiable. It also makes no predictions about the future. Another thing about naturalism is that so far it worked. In the last thousands of years, we have made huge technological advances and health advances just because of methodological naturalism. An example is the Black Plague. Black Plague in medieval times in Europe wiped out over 20 million people alone in Europe. And that's because of a bacterium. And back then, diseases were attributed to demons. So when you had the Black Plague, you were possessed with some kind of demon that made you sick. That's what people thought. So that'd be a supernatural explanation. Nobody will ever be able to disprove you that demons somehow cause these diseases. And you cannot test for it. Yet one guy, Alexander Yersin, he went there and he said, I want to find out what actually causes. So he worked through methodological naturalism. He went there and he discovered the bacterium that actually causes the Black Plague. And he saw that it's transported by rats. And when people get the rats out of their houses, they might have a much higher chance to not get the Black Plague. There you see, when you just stay with these are demons, you will probably never find a cure. Yet, if you go and say, I'm going to find out what it is, and exclude the supernatural, then they found an explanation for it, which actually makes predictions. When you get the rats out of your house, you will probably not get the Black Plague. So, methodological naturalism there worked, and it still works. That does not mean that demons have nothing to do with the Black Plague. It's just that we have found an effective cure by assuming methodological naturalism. So this is one example how this works. The next thing I wanted to go over, and I announced this last week, was peer review. Once you've found out something about the world, you're a scientist and you found out something, you wrote a paper about it, then it has to go through the process of peer review. That means you hand your paper to an editor of a scientific journal. For example, Nature or Science, our common scientific journals. the editors of these papers give it to a number of experts from the field that your paper is about. These experts are often anonymous, yet they give their feedback on your paper on whether to publish the paper or not, or what should be improved. So this is basically what Wikipedia does. You write something on there and a ton of experts are going to review it and correct it. This self-correcting nature eliminates a lot of mistakes. The difference to Wikipedia is, of course, that the peer review process in science occurs before something is published. In Wikipedia, it occurs only after you publish something. That is a difference. Of course, in both, there are going to be mistakes. Peer review in science doesn't eliminate all mistakes. Neither does the self-correcting nature of Wikipedia. Yet, it says that when there is a mistake, sooner or later, it will be corrected. Our next topic is the logical fallacy called false dichotomy, and I'll have Colin Hart here in a second to tell us something about it. Colin Hart, very nice to have you here with us today.
It's nice to be here once again.
So, which fallacy are you going to tell us about today?
It is called false dichotomy, or the black and white fallacy, or the either-or fallacy, or false dilemma.
And how does this fallacy work?
Well, it's when some people say that there's only two options. There's one or the other. When there's almost always another option. Like, if someone's building a plane, and they say that it was either Bill or Tom, and you have to choose one. And it could have been Jim that built the plane, but you never really know.
So you say only because someone says it can either be Bill or John, that doesn't mean that it can't be a third party.
Yeah. Like in the political situation nowadays, George W. Bush once said, "You're either with me or against me," when in some cases you don't have to be either one. You could be neutral.
That's true. Yeah. So back to the plane. Is it also possible that, for example, when somebody says either Bill or John built the plane, it would be also possible that, like, both of them together built the plane?
Yes, yes. So you could be both, or another party could.
So only because somebody makes you a choice when things are not mutually exclusive or there's a third option, that would be the black or white fallacy, right?
Right. Or you could contradict it with, it's hot today, or it's not hot today. That's not right. It could be in the middle.
That's completely true.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Colin Hart, for being with us once again.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much, Colin Hart. Now, how do these things all tie into our debate of evolution, creation? Often people try to say that you have to kind of choose between religion and science, or evolution and creation, so that it's either one or the other. Now, first of all, I'd like to address the evolution or creation. People often try to disprove evolution and say it must be creation, but that's one example of the false dichotomy fallacy. By disproving evolutionary theory, you don't make the case any stronger for creation. There could be another explanation, which we don't know. As we said, the airplane could have been built by a third party, which you don't know. It's not the either-or. And you can't just jump to the supernatural just because one natural explanation doesn't work. The next thing is that science and religion, they do not exclude each other. As I already said, methodological naturalism says nothing about the existence of God. It stays agnostic. That means that science and religion, as I already said, they do not exclude each other. Many scientists, in fact, are believers. And when people try to force other people into this choice of either science or religion, then that is the false dichotomy fallacy. That was basically it for this week's podcast. If you have questions, write us an email, yannick.miller@gmail.com. Yannick is spelled Y-A-N-N-I-C. or visit our blog at sciencepodcast.blogspot.com. Have a nice week. Goodbye.